Hello and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is, well, he got caught with a misdemeanor, robbing a grocery store, and I got him handcuffed to me for the next 72 hours.
This is ridiculous. How am I supposed to stay 6 feet away from you if I'm handcuffed to you?
I got those magic cuffs that extend out.
Listen, the money was just lying there in the register after the employee got shot in the head. Okay, it's not my fault.
All right. I'm not going to call you Smooth, though.
That's fine. My name isn't Smooth. It's Smoove.
Are you a smoothie? Are you a bullshit artist?
Yeah. I'm a real smoothie. Yep. Let's talk about that movie. No, I like this movie, so let's talk about this one.
You know, I like this movie too. But yeah, so this is the special episode for August, and this was an unintentional theme month of all 1996, because I didn't feel like doing like another extra month of like the other Spike Lee movie from 1996 paired with the Oscar winner from 96. I'd rather do this. So yeah, so we're talking about Get on the Bus. A Spike Lee movie that I feel like it's mostly forgotten, because I never really heard of it until I started the podcast, and on the schedule, like, I didn't add it until maybe like a year ago, because I kept forgetting this was another Spike Lee movie.
I think I knew it was a Spike Lee movie, but it is mostly forgotten. I figured it was for the same reason that Girl 6, which was another movie that I liked but is mostly never talked about. People probably just considered it bad, but I would be hard pressed to see why somebody would consider this movie to be bad.
Like Girl 6 has a stigma of Prince music, which comes with complicated legal stuff.
Right.
So that probably plays into why. But in this one, it's like, I'm not sure why it got forgotten, because like it seemed to do okay, like critically at the time. Like I found the Ebert review, he gave it 4 stars.
Wow. So
at least like, you know, Ebert was into it. So yeah, I don't know. Like this one just like kind of gets overlooked, and I'm happy Netflix got the rights to it and has it on there, so that although where is Girl 6? But again, probably music rights is the thing holding that one back. But yeah, so this was did you see this movie before we did this?
No, definitely not. And I didn't really know what it was about. For some reason, I thought it had Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee in it, but I must be mixing it up with the. There's definitely a movie with both of them in it, right?
Jungle Fever and Do the Right Thing.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. I thought this was another one for both of them.
But and they did just a movie, Ossie Davis. Movie in the 60s with Godfrey Cambridge, based off of their play that Ossie wrote. Pearly
Gremlins 3.
No, it's the play that when I was on Broadway, Godfrey Cambridge was nominated for a Tony, but he lost to like Walter Matthau, or something like that.
Of course, why didn't you say so? That's I don't know anything about Broadway Tonys or Matthaus.
I just know because I'm mid working a article about Godfrey Cambridge, and yeah, Ossie Davis comes up quite a bit in their career.
I see.
So I'm not bothering with the name of that play is, but I can look that up later. So yeah, where do I want to start with this movie? Because like this is 96 is an interesting year for Spike, because the both movies that came out that he made, he did not write, and it definitely shows. Like, and not in a good or not in a bad way or a good way. Just kind of like it is noticeable that like oh, this isn't like your, this isn't like Jungle Fever or I don't say Clockers, but I think someone else, I think Clockers was a co-writing thing. But you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, it feels, this is, I don't know.
The dialogue doesn't feel necessarily like the way Spike Lee would talk, you know, speaking from the voice. It's funny that this is not him writing it, because I feel like to immediately criticize something, the most artificial part to me felt like the whole part where the guy was admitting to be a quote unquote former gangbanger. And things like that, like when he monologues about that, like it felt really false. And I was like, oh, yeah, because Spike Lee kind of grew up upper middle class or whatever. Like he did, like I'm sure he knows about it, but he doesn't have like firsthand experience about stuff like that, so it makes sense. But he didn't write it, so yeah. But it doesn't, it's not, sna the movie's not snappy that way. That he has with a lot of his characters talking back and forth, but I mean, it still feels like a Spike Lee movie.
Yeah, you get one scene of like people like dissing each other as a joke or whatever, and you get like what's that one I'm trying to think of? You don't get too many crazy names, but you get at least a couple crazy, sort of crazy names.
Well, they go into it like in the movie because he's like, "Whoa, that's an, I mean, Z, I'm not, or X, I'm not going to call you X. That's not a name. I've heard all these other crazy names, but I'm definitely not calling you X."
And at that point, that particular scene, I was definitely thinking like, oh, is this going to be like a Nation of Islam thing? Is he also a Muslim? And it's like, oh no, it's just a nickname, nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, he could have said that, but he's playing a 19-year-old college kid. I think the actor is in his 30s, but
I think Hill Harper is probably in his 20s.
let's see. Hal Harper, it's not going to say this on Letterboxd. No point in looking. I mean.
Think he might be like 10 years or 10 years older than you, like around that bracket.
Okay, so like 25 or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not that bad.
No, but I don't like the cast because
Yeah, it's great.
you get Charles S. Dutton, the
You get Bernie
legendary.
Mac. Oh wait, he doesn't say anything.
He says to
I mean,
a couple things.
he has a couple of comebacks, but he's not a character.
No, it's not like he just wanted to be in a Spike Lee movie.
It made me super happy to see him though. Like I like said out loud, "Oh, Bernie Mac, we miss you so much."
Yeah, it made me. Yeah, like it was happy, but I was like, man, he was so great and talented. Why he had to go so soon?
Yeah. Sorry, Charles S. Dutton, he's great.
Yeah, and the theme of the movie of like crime and stuff like it comes up like didn't Charles Dutton kill someone?
He was for manslaughter. He killed a guy in a bar fight or something like that, bar altercation.
But it wasn't like a hate crime like Wahlberg.
No, wasn't anything like that. It was more like Nicolas Cage in the beginning of Con Air.
Okay. But yeah,
And
Charles.
Andre Braugher.
Yep, from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And seeing him in this was kind of crazy. I've never seen him young. I've only seen him as like as Holt on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I mean, he's kind of had an old man, like even when he's younger, like in this movie, he has an old man face. It's just kind
Yeah, and it's do you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
No, I don't.
It's okay,
But
so
I've seen it in a bunch of other things.
but in Brooklyn Nine-Nine he plays the captain of the precinct or whatever, and he's gay, and seeing him in this
Right.
was like, oh wow, this is Very strange that he's playing a homophobe.
Yeah. Just goes to show he's an actor. Takes
Yeah.
a role, runs with it. And he's great.
Yeah, Harry Lennox is great. You know, don't get enough of him. He
Which
was
one? Hold on, let me look at this.
Harry Lennox was Isaiah Thom. No, Isaiah Thompson.
Oh, he was. Oh, yeah. Okay. He was the openly gay guy that kept getting into arguments with Andre Brower.
Yeah, and he was on that Joss Whedon show. I forgot which one.
Is on Firefly?
Where's Dollhouse? He's
or
on.
Maybe it was Dollhouse.
He is on what a Joss Whedon show. It's kind of which one though.
I know him from the last or the second two Matrix movies. He's kind of a thing.
Who else? Roger Smith, of course.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Excuse me. Isaiah Washington, who is
yep.
very good, but yeah, he's
yeah.
trash.
That's regrettable, but like obviously he had, you know, he gets in trouble for saying the F word, and I don't mean fuck. And then, like, you see him in this movie, he says it a bunch of times. So it's not like he didn't have experience with the word. Like, I don't know. I feel very complicated about that. Like, if he's an actual homophobe, then yeah, go to hell.
Yeah, also he's a Trump supporter, too.
Oh, yeah, never mind. He can go to hell.
Yeah.
That's too bad. He's great.
Yeah,
in the movies, he's great.
Yeah, it's kind of shitty. It's like, oh, you're also supporting shitty president. I guess like the Republican part maybe wasn't so far off.
You mean with Wendell, or what's his name?
Wendell Pierce.
Wendell Pierce, that's right. Yeah, dressed exactly like Bunk from The Wire. like he was trying out for that part because I think that series started in like 2001 or something.
Yeah, even had a cigar that Bunk always had, which
kept
makes
talking
me
about
think,
Jimmy.
Which makes me think like. Maybe this like cigars. Maybe that wasn't like a thing that The Wire did. Like that wasn't part of the show. Like that's a he brought a cigar on set, and they're like, okay, we're gonna work with it.
Yeah, it's an HBO thing. It's like James Gandolfini. He loves cigars. Therefore, Tony Soprano always smokes cigars.
Yeah. Who else was it? I mentioned Hill Harper, who was in the He Got Game, and. He's in a bunch. I think he's in like a bunch of the Rob Cohen movies, at least a couple of Rob Cohen movies. He's a principal in The Boy Next Door, and he's in The Skulls. I don't know what it's called, but Ali Ossie Davis, legend, one of the greatest people of the 20th century, and but I'm saving the best for last. My favorite Spike Lee actor. You know who I'm talking about?
Richard Belzer?
No.
He was in Girl 6 also. It was a big year for Richard Belzer.
Thomas Jefferson
Thomas
Bird.
Thomas Jefferson Bird. Yeah. Said it at the same time.
Yeah. And it opens with them, which was like, oh, this is a great way to start the movie. The best way to start the movie.
I feel like this is the first time he wasn't playing I apologize if this is an offensive term, but a goober. he's supposed to be kind of a, you know, he's a louse, you know, father who abandoned his child. I abandoned my child. No, anyway, but yeah, he's not playing a slightly drunk or a crazy person or the religion in the Red Hook Summer when he's like the, I guess he's the janitor. I don't know.
I guess he's like the caretaker of the church in that.
Yeah, well, he's also drunk in that one. Now I think about it.
Yeah, I think like even Bamboozled. He's like playing as he's a goober. That the goober who's willing to sell out his race for success. I mean, it's still over the top, but like it definitely is the most reined in I've seen I've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, he's, yeah.
And it's still like, oh, he's great, even like subtle and subtle for him and reined in.
Do you think he was still wearing that jock strap?
Potentially.
I'm not sure which episode is going to come out first, but if you've seen Girl Six, you know what I'm talking about, listener.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's paired with DeAndre Bonds, who was in a movie we talked about with Kill by Kill. Well, I talked about, you weren't on that episode. Tales from the Hood.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he's one of the three guys who gets punished to hell in that, I'm pretty
Oh,
sure.
like the bookend thing going on?
Yeah. I'm pretty
Yeah.
sure he's one of those three guys. But yeah, so like, and like all the cast represent like different parts of society, and like you have I wrote down Seven Dwarfs slash, you get it. You have like you have like the hyper religious guy, the like the preacher. You have also you have a Muslim. Who was that guy? Gabriel something. He's like the on Islam and changed his life. Gabriel Casas.
Right, that's the is that the former gangbanger?
Yeah, I think that's him. You have like the criminal element slash like stereotype of like the dad who's on the picture with like Thomas Jefferson Bird and DeAndre Bonds. You have a cop and with Roger Smith. You have like the you have Ossie Davis representing like the old generation. You have like Horny at with like Andre Brower.
Yeah, Mr. 3000. No, wait.
He didn't do enough to even like make the list, but
No.
yeah, and does a great job of showing like the different sides, and like it feels like a play in the best
Oh,
way,
yeah, for sure, yeah.
which kind of like the other 96 Spike movie, it also feels like a play, although this one I can see this one it's a lot more comes across a lot more because it's a single location and just characters talking and talking about life. And well, because like Girl Six tricks you, like cause Girl Six could easily play, but it tricks you, and with like that there are multiple locations. There's like a potential serial killer subplot going on. It gets dreamy and like you can't tell what's real, what's not real.
Sure.
But this one is just like it's just literally almost the entire runtime is on a bus, singing, talking, hanging out, and you just get different perspectives on life and where they come from, and the different like points of view and opinions on things, and it touches on like literally like almost everything.
Be like the buy it's like a bottle episode on a show where they don't leave the room almost, but you know they do go to certain locations, and it's like there's a scene at a bar when but that could have been excised during the movie. You know, it could have been something people were talking about on the bus. The part where they, you know, and also the part where they blow out a tire and break an axle, that could have been something they talked about later on the bus once again. Like there are a bunch of things that almost, yeah, if it was a play, feel like they were tacked on extra scenes for a movie. I mean, they all work. But yeah.
It's like a nice little road movie, and it's preachy, but it doesn't feel preachy in a bad way until until like the past hour mark, where it's like for me, I started to get a little tired of it. It's like I like it overall, not as much as Girl Six, but like this, like it just kind of for me reached a point of like, can we just change location? Also, I had a really bad sinus headache when I was watching it, so I think that maybe made me a little more less tolerant of just the hanging out quality of it.
Sure. The movie feels like super relevant right now, as a lot of Spike Lee movies end up feeling, but this one in particular, I feel like people should watch or watch, with other people and get together. Like it doesn't answer the problems with whatever's going on with racial tensions or in this case, we didn't even talk like the plot of the movie is they all these men are on their way to the Million Man March
Oh
that
yeah.
happened in 1995.
Chris said
And so,
that part already.
yeah, there's a lot of talk about religion, about Louis Farrakhan, and there's talk about sexual orientation, there's talk about violence, and talk about over-policing on top of that. There is, like
This
a really good
colorism.
section with Wendell Pierce. Oh yeah, that was anyway. He would like leave that Andre Brower, leave it alone. Why do you have to keep bringing up that his mom is white? But
Yeah, that was to use the overused term, a little triggering for me. But then
Well,
Ossie
yeah, a
Davis,
personal experience, I'm sure.
yeah, and Ossie Davis. Although my dad's mixed and my mom is black, so like whatever. But some people
Well, I've
don't buy
seen
it.
you. You look like later stage Michael Jackson, so.
No, I don't.
Okay. I just wanted to paint a picture for the listener.
No, I get mistaken. Well, I used to get mistaken for Mexican all the time.
Oh,
Which,
you?
yes, and like in
That
high
never happens
school,
to me.
yeah, that or like people would ask, "Are you Middle Eastern? Are you Mediterranean?" I look vaguely ethnic enough to stick out.
Just answer yes every time. Whatever anybody says. You Japanese? Happened to my father, who is definitely Mexican. Like, you wouldn't mistake him for a person of a different race. Was in Vegas at a poker table, and a stranger walked up to him and was like, "Excuse me, sir, are you Japanese?" And he said, "No." And the guy just walked away.
That's
And
weird.
I guess it's because my dad has, I guess he has almond shaped eyes, and so do I. But as far as we know, as far as we know, he definitely doesn't speak Japanese.
Well, okay, but like also like but the Million Man March was I guess like a quick refresher was 1995. The leader of the Nation of Islam, Louis Farrakhan, called for the Student Unification Day of what is the word? Atonement for like the black community, not sure black community, but like had a giant march and likes
Specifically, black men.
yeah, which comes up in the movie with two women, which I think is the only time that you see women in the whole movie, except for the
No,
doctors.
Thomas Jefferson Bird. No, not Thomas Jefferson Bird. I'm sorry. Roger Smith gets dropped off by his girlfriend or wife in the beginning. I'm not sure what she is.
Oh, yeah.
But like they have that whole discussion about how it's sexist before he gets out of the car.
Yeah. It kind of is, because Nation of Islam has definitely has some controversies and issues attached to him.
It's interesting that we don't get to know the character in there that is dressed as a member of the Nation of Islam with the tie and everything like that,
Yeah, because like with Malcolm and Malcolm X, and if you know anything about Malcolm X, like the Nation of Islam, like in that movie, doesn't come across as a good organization, really, because like, because like Louis Farrakhan was kind of like the alternative to Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, like the little more the more extreme side, like more extreme one. That's a bad comparison. You know what I'm trying to say?
Listener, because
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. I do know what you're trying to say.
And like people have accused him of being sexist and homophobic and anti-Semitic, which it doesn't come up in Malcolm X, the movie, but if you like learn more about him, like he kind of was a little anti-Semitic and a little homophobic, but
I mean,
partially.
Richard Belzer, who takes over driving the bus from the other guy, who you feel real bad for that guy who has to stay with the bus. Like he really wanted to be at the march. He ditches them at when they make a stop because, and he talks about it. It's like Farrakhan said Hitler did good and that the Jewish people should be wiped out. So it doesn't sound like he's a little anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I mean, like I saw on Twitter like a month ago or so, like someone tried to like zing Malcolm X by posting the quote where that's anti-Semitic, and it's like, well, he wasn't a perfect person. Like they're like, I love Malcolm X as a as like, and I'm not saying as an icon, but like he, I mean, he's a cultural icon. But there are definitely problems that come along with Malcolm X, but like Farrakhan, I don't know as much about, and I kind of don't like the Nation of Islam as a, that much as a whole. Yeah, I'm a,
Are they going to come after us now?
I don't know.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I mean.
One of our 14 listeners is going to report back to them.
Yeah, so as always, let's start with the negative. What, like, what's something? What's like? What's the main thing in the movie that didn't work for you? That like you that you didn't like that much?
There were like I didn't expect anyone to come to any conclusions about like their disagreements or something or stuff like that. Like I actually like the fact that they were able to have their like heated discussions, but it with the exception of one time, it didn't end in violence, right? And Andre Bauer was asking for it when that happened.
Oh, dude.
But like I said, that their scene with what is the you said his name? Looking at a list of names. Last name starts with a C. There it is. Gabriel Casillas. He's the reformed gangbanger, now Muslim. He does this long monologue talking about like, oh yeah, I killed so many people, I can't count it on one hand, and all this, like, and then my best friend, he went down, and that's when I, changed, and I was crossing the street and thinking about where I was gonna get ready to kill myself or something, and then oh, I saw this lady, and now we're married, and she fixed it all. And it like it feels artificial, and that makes that the conflict between him and Roger Smith feel artificial.
It's very like Roger Smith being the cop was like was not a surprise. It's like something Patton was like, I mean he's like he one he well he's light skinned, so like physically he sticks out, but just like way he carried himself is like, well, there's something like he's hiding a secret. I'm just not sure what that secret is yet.
Yeah. I'm surprised that more people didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Spike likes the, I don't know, it's like Spike, criticizes the NYPD, but then he made videos promoting NYPD after, and I was kind of hoping for more discussion around that because this is, the wake of Rodney King and the LA riots and all that stuff. So it's like, is that going to come up in like a And you think it's going to come up more, and it just kind of just sticks with just, I guess, supposed to maybe just the whole conflict between him and the reformed gangbanger supposed to represent that, I guess. I don't
Sure. Yeah.
know.
I mean, if it was written by Spike Lee, he would have put in all that stuff like that, and it would be almost 3 hours long. It added, you know, it's about 2 hours long.
Yeah.
But it honestly, it doesn't feel like a long movie. I think it felt pretty good lengthwise, flow-wise.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the same screenwriter, because they also wrote...
screenwriter was Reggie Rock Blythewood.
Yes, and he wrote Notorious.
He also wrote Biker Boys.
Yeah. He directed Biker Boys. Okay. But Notorious, I guess, would be his biggest movie that people would know. And I'm pretty sure on Beyond the Lights, that might be an episode, if I can find the right... But there's some people in mind I want to talk about movies. Depends if we can get a hold of them.
Can you get a hold of Gugu? Can we get her on the episode?
I'm sure she's busy.
Oh, man. She's great.
I haven't seen her anything, but that's what I hear. Yeah, but... let's see, what else didn't work for me? Just like, after the hour mark, I started getting tired. It's kind of like, can we just get to the, because it kind of just felt like it was going in circles a bit, where it'd be like, they'd be talking about something and like chatting, and then suddenly, you know, a heated discussion happens, and like, it gets, and then it, you know, it dies down, mm-hmm. and then...
And yeah. Like, I think that works because they kept what, you know, they'd have that, like, a kind of a heated discussion or, you know, finding out something. And then they would mix it in with the, like, fellowship moments where everyone was, like, singing or rapping, as it were. And I, like, that felt like a real thing to me. Like, even though people wouldn't be getting along, they might, you know, all sing together anyways.
Yeah, like, I don't know, this is, I feel like maybe just add something else to the formula. Mm-hmm. It started to get a little too repetitive. And,
Oh, they were on a bus.
Yeah. I mean, like, even though it's not a Spike script, it still had his, like, kind of his judgy attitude that comes across in movies. Where, like, sure. After they play the James Brown song, you have a hard cut to the young kid blasting hip hop in his headphones, and so like turn off, and Thomas Burr to like turn off that crap. It's like, I get it. It's like really showing the generational differences.
Yep.
And like some of that was just like little too, like that's. I mean, also that's like a parent thing, because like my sister would have her Walkman too loud all the time, but here just felt like him being like, see what the young kids are like a little bit,
and you know that teenager kid character was not a character anyway. Like, he was, you know, overly angry, and then like I really thought
he's an object to make Thomas Jefferson a better character.
Yeah, I think Thomas Jefferson Bird in the scene where the kid runs off and he catches up to him in the woods, that monologue he delivers, he fucking brings it. But he might as well be talking to a piece of, you know, wood.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is interesting because, like, the year before, DeAndre Bonds was in Tales from the Hood, which is a similar thing where, like, he has to play against Clarence Williams III. And Clarence Williams III gives, like, a all-time great performance in Tales from the Hood. And, like, seeing DeAndre go against Clarence is like, oh, you can really tell who's talented and who isn't talented. Not talented. Yeah. I'm sure he got better because he's still working.
Experienced and has a character.
Yeah. And since I mentioned Clarence Williams III, my great grandfather's brother played trombone in the 20s for various jazz people, played trombone with Clarence Williams I, who was the grandfather of Clarence Williams III. And there's pictures of them together that I came across. And yeah, I didn't realize I have a direct family connection to Clarence Williams III.
And does Clarence Williams the First look like Clarence Williams the Third's character in Tales from the Hood? Because that would be a picture of your granduncle or whatever right next
Something like that. Unfortunately,
to.
no. He looks like a jazz man from the 20s.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
And how are you related to Clarence Thomas?
Well, not family connect. Oh, Clarence Thomas. No, he's. I love that they call out Clarence Thomas in this.
Yep, that was funny.
Because he is complete trash, and there's a lot of and that's not alleged. He is complete fucking trash.
Yeah.
And
In
going.
so many, like in a bunch of different ways, it's kind of outstanding.
Yeah, and he replaced Thurgood Marshall in the Supreme Court. And Thurgood Marshall hated Clarence Thomas because he was against everything that he fought for to get to help America as a nation. And like people want to know like Brown versus Board with Thurgood Marshall. There's a great book called American Revolutionary that covers his life and shows him as a complex and like kind of difficult person, but. Like he was a part of Roe versus Wade. He's part of the reason that went through. He's a part of the Miranda rights. And I think there's another big decision. I can't remember the big decision, but like, yeah, like we wouldn't have, the Miranda rights be a law if it weren't for Thurgood Marshall in Roe versus Wade, which hopefully stays enacted. And like, that was. Partially thanks to him fighting for it, and he fought for another abortion bill that would make it that directly benefit like lower class women of color, but that got shot down like immediately. That was like in the late 70s, early 80s. Also, like getting back to the movie, the end felt abrupt, where it's like. I assumed Ossie Davis was going to die in this.
Sure.
Like the moment you see him and like you hear he has no family and all that's like, well, there's gonna be some dramatic turn with that character. Like it's pretty telegraphed and you're not quite sure what exactly.
He's got that mysterious hospital hospital bracelet that he tears off his wrist before he gets on the bus.
Yeah, and like, and like it definitely seems like he's making up for lost time, which is his whole thing of like, I could have,
Yeah, the story he lays out is really good. The gravitas that he brings is, I don't think you could really have anybody else do that. Like, even Morgan Freeman today, I feel like, wouldn't be able to handle it the same way he Ossie Davis does it in this movie.
I don't know if Morgan Freeman would really try. But like he's good, but like does he still really try, or do you think he's like a kind of autopilot of like import like the older actor who heightens the project?
I don't know if anyone's offering him interesting roles anymore. Like the last time somebody was offering him good stuff was Clint Eastwood, probably, and I don't think they've worked together in the last decade or so.
Yeah. Although I feel like he might be closer to Eastwood than you think. I have that feeling about him.
What do you mean? They made out?
No, like, Black and Black Cinema had brought this up a while ago. I can't remember when. But apparently, like, he was interviewed in something, and he kind of said, like, well, Black people just bring up, like, should work harder and bring themselves up by their bootstraps type bullshit. He's like, oh, you're out of touch.
I'm not surprised in the slightest to hear that. Like, anyone over a certain age, I'm not surprised to hear that they have conservative point of view.
I don't know his politics, but that this here and that's like, oh, okay, you've been too successful for too long. You kind of forgot what
yeah, normal people are like. If you say the word bootstraps with a serious face, you should just jump in front of a train already.
Yeah, kind of disappointing.
That's okay. He did lots of good movies.
Yeah.
It's like Michael Caine. That guy's a total conservative douche.
Yeah. I mean, he left England because the taxes were too high.
Oh, yeah.
And he lives in, like, Florida or some shit. It's
not because he hates Pakistani people.
He could be racist.
I don't know if he actually hates Pakistani people. I just remember some quotes about him. Yeah. Not lying at the taxes thing.
Yeah, that's no reason. I suspect he might be because he has money. But, I don't know. Okay, so, like, how do you think the gay subplot was handled? Do you think it was cringy because of the time, like, and how time has evolved, or do you think it was still, I have mixed opinions on how it was handled.
I don't know if I'm the right person to judge that, but...
What was your gut feeling on it?
If it felt okay to me, because... Like, it didn't go into, like, right or wrong or anything like that. It kind of handled, like, these are just people. And they're like... How do I say this? There were two different types of gay people. You know, one guy who was out and proud, and the other one who was his ex, who was closeted but also knew he was gay. And you know, they talk about that a little bit, and of course there's homophobia like that. It makes sense, but. For the time period and for now, and you know what, people are terrible. Yeah, I thought it was okay, but I mean, like I said, like if somebody told me that there were things that were inappropriate about it, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I totally see what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, like it mainly came from the character that Andre Brower was playing, being like so aggressively homophobic, like macho, and being like. He brags about all the women he fucks, and he has like a stable of honeys. What did he say? Something like that.
I believe he said that. Yes.
He's always just, you know, clearly trying to overcompensate.
But he's a man with a lot to brag about.
Yeah. But at the same time, what? It just felt like. I don't know, like...
That felt like a writer's character, like somebody who'd been written plays before, and like, oh, I'm going to have an actor character, he's going to be an ass. Because all actors are asses. I speak from experience as a former actor in recovery now.
Okay. Yeah, but, yeah, I lost it. There's something about I was surprised with, like, the cat is at the water dish and the dog doesn't like it and she's growling at her to get her to leave the water dish and the cat is just sitting there waiting.
Drinking water. Yeah, that's fine.
No, she's just waiting for the dog to stop.
Freya? Wednesday?
He's, but I lost it.
I mean, did something in particular seem inappropriate besides Andre Brower's homophobia?
No, I was going to say, I was surprised with the Ossie Davis character being like, the Bible says it's a sin, but if one of my sons was, I don't know how to feel about it. And maybe if I was born that way, and it's kind of this nice touch of like, huh.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I do like the way his character is, you know, like I know from age and experience that thinking one way doesn't necessarily mean that's the way it's always going to be.
Yeah. And like his character felt like nothing but the main guy, nothing but a man, but the opposite, where nothing but a man, like if he just shut up and didn't try to get treated, because like happened when he worked at the sawmill, like people I need to watch that movie again. I forgot what happened exactly, but I guess like for like, I'm not sure. I'm tired.
All right, take a breath.
Yeah, but by that point, I think my headache was getting real bad, and just kind of like is annoying me.
Sure.
For some reason.
That's when Isaiah Washington gets out. He's doing these like kung fu commando moves, which I thought were really funny. Like I don't know if the actor is actually trained in martial arts, but he's doing some some imitation Wesley Snipes stuff, in my opinion, you know, roundhouse kicks and things like that.
Oh yeah. And in promo pictures and from this movie, mm-hmm. you see if you look at Isaiah Washington, he looks like when you first see Adrian Brody in Summer of Sam.
Yep. Went to the same barber.
Yeah, same hair, same type of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Both are like. Well, do you think his character was like bi or like just like somewhere on. Not because like it's kind of talked about because like his lover says like, oh, is it another man, another woman? Because like that also play into like the precursor to the Summer Sam character, where it's like this open sexuality. Well, I don't know the right terms to use, but you know what I'm trying to get at.
Yes, as a heterosexual half white male, I have to say, I mean that it's stupid talking about like sexuality in movies pre, I don't even know what, 2010, because they just pretend that bi and you know things like that like don't exist, like the spectrum of sexual preferences don't exist. So if somebody is bi in a movie, oh, it's because they're going through a phase. Like literally, it'll be like, yeah, turns out I wasn't gay. I do only love women or whatever. Like, it's just not a thing. And if somebody says they're bi, people roll their eyes and stuff like that. It's like, honestly, I don't know, and the answer is probably yes, I would think, that his character was actually bisexual, but, you know, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So, Hill Harper, did you like his role as, like, the young guy who's, like, like he and the kid are supposed to represent like the young generation, but the kid kind of doesn't add much. But Hill Harper, do you think he was a did a better job of like being like the young like the token young person of the group?
You mean the guy who asks way too personal questions without asking permission first? Yeah, I mean, I think he does fine. He doesn't. The funny thing is, like, he's supposed to be 19 and kind of naive, but I don't think he necessarily plays naive. At the end, it's like, I've learned a lesson. Like, well, I guess we all experience something on this bus trip, but, I don't know. He's going to, like, UCLA film school and stuff like that, so he probably comes from at least some money.
He's a good
And
man because he doesn't cheat.
oh, sure, yeah. I don't know. He's fine, like, but he's kind of, I wouldn't say he's like an essential character.
Hey, stop.
Sorry.
She was pinning the cat down and like,
Freya?
yeah. She
It's not
does it
good.
sometimes.
Time to put Wednesday out to pasture.
No.
That's what I've been saying about Pascal recently, because he's been chasing his much older brother around the house. Wake up in the middle of the night because the cats are screaming. Of course, he's asleep right now, right next to me. He's the sweetest little boy.
Who was it? The other guy who was with Bernie Mac, who is like a, who fulfills the conspiracy theory like side of things. Like he definitely feels like conspiracy. Oh, what was it? The Chappelle character and Undercover Brother. Think it's called just conspiracy theorist brother or conspiracy. Probably like a precursor to that. Like they were directly referencing this character. You know what I'm talking about?
I haven't seen that movie, but like I feel like a bunch, a lot of these are based on these archetypes of like people that exist in the real world, right?
It's Conspiracy Brother, that's his name, and he like he's thinks everything is a conspiracy.
He's right.
Yeah, and they started with the Holocaust, and like this would be this like Dachau. This is like I think it's from Dachau. He mentioned another one, but in that because I just watched a movie, a great Sinbad movie that should be more available, but it's not. Called Camp.
A great
Theroy?
what movie?
Simbin.
Sinbin.
He did Black Girl.
Okay, I thought you
Oh.
said Sinbad movie, and I was going to be like, what the hell is he talking about?
No, but he just moved in the late 80s. Co-directed someone else. Camp. Theroy? I'm trying to print, say it correctly, but it's about this this group of African soldiers in what was colonized Senegal during World War II, and how the French military sent tanks to their camp to kill them because they suspected they're communists and they're causing quote unquote too much trouble in the area, and Sinbad uses a metaphor of like the German Holocaust with like with French colonization. And it's just a really powerful, great movie. And it's kind of like Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, where it's like it deals some very serious stuff. And it's also in World War II, but it's also like parts are very funny, parts are really heartbreaking. And it's like them talking about the like parts of this remind me of that movie. And it's definitely should be more available. And it's kind of one of the best World War II movies. Because it also like is about other things in World War II. And also it's the first World War II movie I've ever seen with African soldiers. Because that their narrative gets like cut out of kind of any World War II movie that comes out pretty much. And yeah, but seek that movie out. It's on Netflix DVD, and the DVD itself costs way too much because it's been out of print for quite a while. I know you probably didn't notice too much, but the music was great. Like it wasn't the typical songs you would expect. It was a lot of deeper cuts. Not actually deeper cuts, but like because they had Curse Mayfield, but it wasn't like the Curse Mayfield songs you always hear. And they had James Brown song was one that isn't overdone. And it's just nice to be like, oh, these songs are great. And
the opening Michael Jackson song.
Yeah. I mean,
there were some of the songs felt like a little too on the nose for me. Like I did notice the music this time, because I mean they play a lot of songs during the thing, but some of it felt like okay.
Yeah.
You want me to feel a certain way, I get it.
Do you think the do you think maybe it could be like legal stuff with the Michael Jackson song?
What do you mean?
I let that like keep us that hold this movie back potentially, because like I don't know if it, I think there's a DVD out there. I'm pretty sure it's been out of print for a while.
I mean, well, but unlike Girl 6, like this one is on Netflix, and we were saying that we thought that the music was the thing keeping it basically even from being rentable. And this one you can rent. I think I can get on the bus with a two and a movie 2-pack with something. Let me see. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, I think it's like She Hate Me.
Oh, Jesus. That's not fair. No, I have a single DVD of She Hate Me. So. Okay, it comes in a disc box set with... No, never mind. It's just a single Get on the Bus DVD. Only $43.34. Yeah. All right. I'll buy two.
Yeah, we should restore this one. Restore another one.
Yeah. Somebody should grab it, yeah.
But, we didn't talk about intro. The intro was the credits and intercut with shots of a black man in chains, and the movie ends with not sure if he picked up on a symbolism. Thomas Berg unchains his son and leaves the chains in front of the Lincoln Memorial.
Right, so that Lincoln can lock himself up.
Mm-hmm.
I assume.
Yeah, really, a bit on the nose. Like, that for me, I was too on the nose.
Yeah. They were in Capitol. What else are you supposed to do?
Yeah. But, I don't know, I'm still surprised, like, that I should have been used to, like, the spike on the nose stuff, but. But like this one was like little like okay. Easter ended just with like the prayer and the Aussie stuff. Like that was a step too far. But it's symmetrical with the movie.
I don't think that was the prayer that Ozzie Davis actually wrote, by the way, because I don't know if you saw when he was writing. You can't read that handwriting.
You're saying something about the prayer. I think it wasn't the same prayer that you saw in the
beginning. You see him writing it on the bus, and you see his handwriting, and it's like it's the definition of chicken scratch. Like if you look up chicken scratch in the dictionary, there's a picture of that scene. Like no, there's no way that that Roger Smith could have read that.
Yeah.
What did you think about the police Randy Quaid scene? I was like, oh, Randy Quaid.
I suspected that was going to happen at some point.
Uh-huh.
It was fine. Like, I didn't, because the way the movie was going, it's like, it's not going to end that badly. Like, they're not going to send a night in jail or anything. Because, like, this is the way everything was going, and, like, things were being set up and whatever. Like, this never really felt like, oh, this will. I mean, it was fine.
And it slightly defied my expectations on that, where nothing was found. You know, they even had the dogs. It wasn't like a false positive. And also the scene at the bar, because it's like, this is going to go bad, right? A bunch of white people at this bar. No, it turns out to be okay. They end up picking up an asshole and taking him with them instead.
Yeah. And like, in the bar, you get this really nice moment of Ossie Davis being like, you know, a black cowboy invented steer something.
Yep.
Like, huh. Nice reminder, like the old West, like the original cowboys were Mexican and black because white people didn't want to take that job because it was so shitty. But you don't really
see that. And they were right.
Yeah, and you don't really see that in classic Westerns. Well, Westerns really now.
Yeah. Did you, what was I going to say? I was going to say, did this movie have the Spike Lee cam?
No.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's another, that's a mark against it for me.
Where would you have put one? Where do you think?
I think, like, who would, I guess maybe Thomas Bird trying to get his son. Maybe.
I feel like maybe Roger Smith at the end when, you know, he's coming out of the hospital after Ozzie Davis dies. But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes those scenes make sense. Sometimes you feel like almost Spike just kind of put it in because he had to have one.
Yeah.
It's surprising that there's not one. Yeah. Could have been Louis Farrakhan.
No. Some of the speakers at the A Million Man March were Louis Farrakhan, who there's some speculation he played a part in the murder of Malcolm X, but that's a discussion for another time.
That's certainly what the movie thinks.
Ismail Muhammad, who was a part, who's dead? No. But he's a part of the Nation of Islam. Martin Luther King III, Rosa Parks, Maya Angelou, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Jesse Jackson. And seeing this was like, oh man, this maybe Maya was great. She didn't. I'm also kind of glad she didn't live to see this presidency. At the same time. Does that make sense?
Yes, I know what you're saying. If she had lived to see the presidency, it would have killed her anyway.
Yeah. And then recently, like, Trump would probably be asked about, like, her, and he probably would have no clue who she was.
He'd be like, here's a poem I wrote. Roses are red. I farted.
Yep. But, yeah, this is a good movie. It's on Netflix. You can watch it.
You should watch it.
You should watch it, and like, you know, it brings up a lot of what was the one thing I brought up? Oh, okay, I forgot one thing. No, I didn't.
Not interested. It's okay, it's late for you.
Yeah, it is late. But okay, here's a dumb theory. I don't think it works, but...
Okay.
They stop in Arkansas, make a point of talking about Arkansas, which probably because of Little Rock, Arkansas, because of civil rights movement and everything. But part of me was like, did he pick Arkansas also because that's where Uri Moore's from? Although, I doubt it. But then there's, like, the drum circle thing, which is, like, this feels like a Rudy Ray Moore type thing, like Queen.
I think the answer is yes, 100%.
Okay. Although Spike doesn't strike me as someone who would like Rudy's movies, but probably liked his party records.
Yeah. You're right about that. Doesn't seem like his taste.
No. Oh, and there's like the connection to Bamboozled, where at the end Charles Sutton is like, I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, like the thing from comes up in Bamboozled in a bigger way and also references Network. Yeah, but you should watch it. Talk to your family about it. I don't know. This brings up a lot of important things.
Yeah, talk to your teens today about being handcuffed to older men.
Yeah, it feels of its time, but not in a bad way.
No. I mean, it feels. Yeah, there's very little negative to get from it. You know, certain things, just like any movie from before the. Ah, God, what am I talking about? Now I'm too tired. Anyway, you should watch it.
Yeah. And this comes out after Girl 6 and before Secrets and Lies. So if you have Criterion Channel, I believe Mike Lee movies are on that currently. And that's kind of only easiest place you can find a lot of that Mike Lee stuff that isn't post, like, topsy-turvy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff from the 80s and 90s is kind of forgotten on disc, like Secrets and Lies. But if you would want to watch that beforehand, which I think we both would highly recommend watching that movie, not because we spoil it, but just
I mean, you should be in a good place emotionally if you're going to watch that movie. It's, you know, it's no... what is that tragedy old people movie we watched?
Oh, Amour?
Yeah, it's no Amour. It's no Amour, but it, like, personally, it got to my emotions, which, as you know, I'm usually made out of stone.
Amour got to me. So.
No, I didn't say Amour got to me. I'm talking about Secrets and Lies. No, if you listen to the Amour episode, I sound like an asshole.
Yeah, you do.
Like, it didn't really affect me, you know. Well, I think it might affect me now because I recently lost somebody. So.
The two leads of Amour will come back in the next season, actually.
But how can they? They're dead. I saw that movie.
Exactly when the first ones of the next season will... The star, the female lead of Amour, Emmanuel Riva, a movie she starred in, which is a hint for next season, which hasn't really been formally announced yet, but a nice little hint. Okay, so watch us on Netflix while it's still there, because Netflix is going to disappear out of nowhere one day. So take advantage of the moment while we still have it.
Mm-hmm.
And if Atlantix is still on there, watch Atlantix.
Oh yeah, why aren't you watching that right now?
So this will come out. I don't know when my Street Trash episode of Grindbin comes out, but it'll be this month, I think. So maybe it's out by now. But yeah, I was on the Grindbin talking about Street Trash, is on Shudder. And if you watch something that's stupid and gory, watch that movie. If you don't feel like watching something stupid and gory, don't really bother.
Yeah, I don't... That movie's fine. it has some good effects, but it's a little too rapey for me. I mean, it's not like graphic rapes, but still, it's like, oh, man.
Yeah, it's like a trauma movie with good production value.
I don't know.
Oh, you haven't seen any trauma movies? Don't bother.
No. Yeah, I'm not sure if I have, actually, now that you mention it.
Yeah, it's not worth your time, even the quote-unquote good ones.
Hmm.
And also, you're over 15, so you've outgrown it by now.
Am I, though?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
quite a bit, yeah.
What's the new podcast stuff or whatever?
Well, I don't know. I keep working on things and then I don't get them published, such as the Vampire Podcast. See, it's been so long since I worked on it that I can't remember what it's called. It's called The Dead Travel Fast. It's got me, it's got Spencer, it's got our friend Sarah. I mean, she's my girlfriend, but, you know, she's our friend also. We talk about a vampire movie and some vampire books and some more vampire stuff. And eventually, it's going to be up there. I'm sorry, Allie of the Russophiles Unite podcast specifically asked me where he can get it. I promise it'll be up eventually.
And, you upset Alistair? No.
Oh, I didn't upset him. I think he just is excited to listen. He's our one excited listener.
And Scott.
Oh, yeah, Scott. You can always count on Scott Pads.
Yeah. Even though I did send Scott a thank you card, he sent me a couple books on Russian history that that he was getting rid of, that his church that he's the pastor of is doing a sale or something.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Well, I have seen a trauma movie, Surf Nazis Must Die.
Yeah. I'm sure it's terrible.
And Frightmare. Oh, yeah, Surf Nazis Must Die. Yeah, it's bad. And the other podcast I'm doing, which also has not been published yet, but that's because I haven't finished recording the series, is called Customers Also Watched. It'll be up eventually. Watching an Amazon movie, and from there, we are chaining on the suggested movie afterwards. At the, you know, when you go on Amazon Prime, you watch something, but on the bottom of the list, or on the bottom of that page, there's this section with the other movies that they suggest. And I just wanted to explore where that takes us, because I don't know if you know this about Prime. It's like a, what is the word when they just take stuff, movies from everywhere and kind of throw them on there for free, basically. Or not for free, because you have to pay for Amazon Prime. But sometimes you'll end up with like weird documentaries that have no reason to be seen by anybody, but maybe they'll end up in this chain. But coming soon to your ears, Customers Also Watched.
And next month is September, and I'll be done my first semester back at college. Hopefully, I might be back to doing the Jailhouse 701 site again, but I'm not sure at this point. But September is She's Gonna Have It with Jared Gilman, and Platoon with my friend, maybe she's your friend, I don't know, Lan.
I mean, we're Facebook friends, but I don't think I've, well, no, we might have done a minute by minute podcast together.
Yeah, I have met Lan in person at least once.
You can quiz her on it when we talk to her.
No, I there's a Flophouse thing. I was very nervous to talk to anyone.
Sure.
Yeah, that is embarrassing. I did hug Stuart when I was drunk.
That's cute.
You said he's used to it from fans, apparently.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
Sound like Peter Griffin.
Basically. But, yeah, so the whatever. See you guys for Secrets and Lies, which should be on Criterion Channel as of now, but I don't know.
It probably will be.
Yeah. Let's see here.
All right, stopping.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.